Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We have a lot more good stuff to get into. We've kind of just been building up to this point. And so I hope you've been listening to the last couple of weeks of these episodes. I'll just say this is gold. If you want to understand just where we are, if you want to understand just how easy it is to put ourselves into a position where we can take back our Constitution and get the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution, and even more importantly, rip this republic, the wealth of this republic, rip, R-I-P, tear, another term, tear away out of the grasp of the globalists their ability to subjugate America and the world. Now, there will be those that will fall to their subjugation because they have gone in hook, line, and sinker. They are hand in hand, gland in gland with these evildoers. Or I should say their leaders have sold them out. Just like our leaders have been selling us out for decades, we have been set up for well over a century and manipulated to get into this position. When you look at Dewey, when you look at FDR, when you look at how close these communist leaders had been at the helm of this ship, and they still couldn't just steer it into the tunnel. If you understand, the divine hand of providence has truly given us a system that will allow us to rip, to tear out of their grasp our liberty and to actually preserve it for our posterity. But the only way we can do it, folks, is if we understand one of these principles. And we're not talking about rocket science. We're not talking about anything that really requires a real deep knowledge and advanced education or anything like that. You know, when I look, having buried a few people in my life and having, you know, watched and or seen how that takes a toll, and having seen and understanding Christianity, the doctrine, and so forth. You know, there are a lot of people that sweat a lot of things. But the one thing that I believe we're all kind of held to on the same standard is how we treat each other. You know, I don't think our Creator, I don't think in Christianity, it matters whether you're a rocket scientist or whether you cure the common cold. It does matter if you actually preserve one's ability to be able to have liberty. I'm going to go down a deep subject, and this is an aside that I wasn't even planning for this show, but I want to go here because this really goes hand in hand with the perspective of Christianity and the work that we're doing. A lot of people, I know some people that, you know, nudge me, poke me in the eye and say, you know, you could really be focused on the Lord's work. And that what happens is they don't realize that they just poke themselves in the eye. As I tell people, do you believe it is the Lord's work to allow people to be put into a position where they are subjugated and no longer able to, you know, take on, you know, the Lord's name and do all those things, follow him and obey all of his commandments and live that life that they're supposed to live when we're now being ruled by Caesar, or actually we're now going to be ruled by a state that is far worse than Caesar. If you look at the Communist Chinese Party and what they're doing with social credits, how they're imprisoning their political prisoners, 300 million. If you want to see the evil of the state that is around the corner, you cannot tell me that allowing that to happen is doing the Lord's work. You cannot tell me that. And so what I tell these folks is I believe that one of the most precious things is your ability to accept and choose to do what you want to do. When the state gets us into a position where we can no longer make those choices, then I think that's when, I don't want to say all is lost, but that's when you have sold your soul. If you are not doing everything we can to preserve liberty, you have to understand, liberty is not just a word that's been concocted. It's a biblical word. If you understand what was written on the Liberty Bell, that was from Leviticus. I'm mispronouncing the word or the name of the Bible or the name of the book in the Bible. There's Deuteronomy and Exodus. There it is. It's Exodus. So, see, that's what happens when you go down on a side and you don't have any prep or anything else. You're really just shooting from the hip. But the fact is that there is nothing more precious than your ability to make the choices and to be able to do what you believe you need to do. You know, when Christ was walking on the earth and he came across the gang that was getting ready to stone the adulteress because they were following the law of man, the law of Moses, the law that God gave Moses as a lower law. And they said, we've caught this woman in adultery, you know, we're going to stone her. And then Christ said, well, you who is without sin, or he who's without sin, go ahead and cast the first stone. But what he didn't do is he didn't forgive. What he told that woman is she need, you know, obviously go and sin no more. And that kind of points to the importance of repentance, but you can't be forced. You cannot be compelled. There was nowhere where Christ compelled anybody to do anything. I mean, he kicked some butt. He kicked people out of the temple. I mean, he did assert his authority. But the whole point is, and this is what's really important, you have to understand this, that liberty is the fundamental, it's the bedrock of Christianity. It has been perverted by many generations. I would say if you look at the Roman Catholic Church, if you look at the Caesars, if you look at how they've used coronation and control, the control was never, it was never about Christianity. It was about allowing people to make the choices to follow him and live the life that they believe he wanted them to live. It was never some pope coronating a king. And that's why I got into a few days ago about Locke and his challenging of the divine right, the natural right of the monarch state. The fact is that we all are equal. You know, and the point that Locke made in the two treaties of government was that when when Cain slew Abel, Locke points out, why did God go to Cain? Why didn't he go to Adam? Because clearly Adam was alive at the time, and if monarchies were the divine leadership for here on earth, then why didn't he go to Adam, who should have been the monarch or the king at the time? He didn't. He went to Cain. And so if you understand, and he gets into, you know, how the order was distributive. And if you read the two treaties of government, he really points out that we are all accountable, that we are all supposed to be able to make our own choices and decisions. It was not Adam and Eve, or Adam himself was not the monarch, and Eve was not the monarch. Each of the own households of these young men, when they grew up and left Adam and Eve, they became the kings of their own castles. And that is the order. And that's how it's supposed to be. And if you look at how America was built and designed, every king has his castle on in every home, in every block, and so forth. And every queen has her castle. We are all sovereigns. We are all supposed to be making our own decisions. And that's just how important liberty is in the grand scheme of things. And so those people that want to poke me in the eye and say, you know, you could be doing more with your time and doing the Lord's work. And I'm telling you, I am doing the Lord's work. I'm trying to teach people the importance of liberty and what we have to do to preserve it. If not, we will be subjugated and we will be in a position where we no longer have the ability to make those choices for ourselves. That's why I took you through the concepts of the scale of liberty and got into natural rights and the law of nature and got into republicanism. And so now we're going to be diving deeper into republicanism and getting more specifically regarding the 17th Amendment and Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution. So as you can see, I'm literally coming up on a hard break. So we'll get back into the details, the obligatories, as soon as we come back, and then we'll dive into, like I said, the rescinding of the 17th Amendment and the republicanism of, or I should say, the concept of republicanism of Article 4, Section 4. So we'll be right back after a couple of promos. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
All right, so as you know, this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And this is the show that only, the only show, I should say, that is willing to have the conversation, actually state and assert. Now, I may be going out on a limb, and sometimes, you know, I might have a little bit of insensitivity or may say something that offends somebody, and I'm not trying to do that. But what I am trying to do is I'm trying to, one, challenge your paradigms, and secondly, I am trying to point out the only alternative we have if we are going to save our Constitution, and that is to get the states to stand up. And you have an opportunity to be a part of the solution instead of continuing to be a part of the problem. Our listen number, if you cannot listen to this entire show, it's 605-562-4209. Now, we will be getting into Madison's property once we kind of go through this whole concept of republicanism, go through this concept of the importance of republicanism within the Constitution. We need to at least restore the paradigm of providing representation to the sovereigns of our government, which is we the people, and those who we have delegated to very specific powers, such as state legislators, county commissioners, city council, mayors, and so forth. Now, they're not the king of the world, right? A mayor is not the president of the United States, and he has no authority to dictate anything outside of the realm of the city he's the mayor for. But he is also supposed to faithfully execute the laws of the land. And a big part of that law of the land is the Constitution. So in other words, if the city council is passing some bill or passing some statute, some regulation that, or even allowing. So a good example is when the city council says, we're going to take federal dollars to make some improvements to our roads, and we're going to put some roundabouts in because that's what they demand we do. Then he has the right to veto them and actually call them out and say, you are violating the Constitution, because the federal government doesn't have the authority to take money from the people and give it to us for these purposes. And guess what? That means that they don't have the ability to tax you so that now you can keep your money. And then you wonder where the money for the road repair and everything else is going to come from. Well, they now are just transferring the taxation that goes and gets sucked into this huge bureaucracy. And it's now going to be maintained and managed at the local level. You need local road work, then you have to. There is a cost to government. Our highway systems is not a federal affair. It is a county affair. It is a city affair. It is the state affair. It is not a federal affair. The only federal affair over roadways are postways, post highways. What's a post highway? A post highway is the single form, or I should say the single vein or avenue that drives you from your state to Washington, D.C. There are interstates that are constitutional because those are considered post roads. Because every state and every capital in every state is supposed to have access to the White House, to the Capitol, to SCOTUS, to be able to get to the seat of government in the District of Columbia. That's why if you look, all these highways kind of traverse and kind of, you know, weave their way to Washington, D.C. And so there's no reason why we should be taking any federal dollars for any other type of road that is not a post road. Now, let me just keep going on, because I haven't finished my obligatories and I went on an aside again. But as you know, we need your help. We need your support. I would beg and plead, if you could, if you drink coffee, then by all means, buy Red State Coffee. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org and follow the link. It'll take you to eBay, and it is a premium coffee. What do you have to lose? What is it, $12, something like that? Free shipping. Try that coffee. And if you don't think it, you know, if you think it's crap, if you think it's what they served the GIs at wartime when they, you know, just filled with piss and vinegar and so forth. And so, you know, just to make them all ornery and mean so they can go out and fight a war, then you have something coming. Because you'll find that that is actually a premium coffee, and you'll find that it's worth it. Because what you're doing is you're not only just having and enjoying a good cup of Joe called Red State Coffee, but you're supporting the show. So with that, there's another way you can support this show with our crowdfunding, but both of those links to Red State Coffee and our GoFundMe links are on our homepage. So go ahead and go there and then click your way to however you want to support. But the most important support you can actually provide is your time and resources and leadership. If you don't know how to lead, then let us know. Because leading is doing the right thing. Leading is not doing how things are done. Leading is not the status quo. Leading is actually understanding what we can do, what we should do, and what we shouldn't do. If it's not in compliance to the Constitution, then you're following an agenda. Leading is getting back to following the Constitution and following the processes. It's not about management. It's about leading. So if you have time, you have a computer, you've got some resources or what have you, let us know. info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. That way we can get you engaged and doing something to actually help us turn this country around. What we want to do, and we're going to be talking about this coming up, because in the next 6 to 9 months, you're going to have an opportunity to go file and run for office and challenge that pogue that represents you in your state capitol. That's right, they're pogues, they're hacks. Almost all of them are hacks. If they're not fighting and they're not signing a pledge of resignation if they violate the Constitution, then they're a hack. Because they're doing things that they shouldn't be doing. That means that you can't trust them. And that's why you should be challenging them. So hopefully in the next couple of days, because this is Constitution Week, Saturday was a 1 month out. So sometime this month or sometime this week, I want to have some time to provide you with a few things that are happening in maybe a town, city, or something near you. If you know something, let us know. And it's pretty sad, or it's pretty pathetic that we don't see a lot of people planning, and it's not that big of a deal to anybody that the Constitution Day is coming up. The birth of the nation, the birth of this republic, the birth of our hybrid constitution republic is just around the corner. It's a month away. What are you doing? It's kind of like when my family decided to celebrate my parents' 50th anniversary. And I'm not going to tell you what gift they gave, what they decided. But as I, engaged in what are we doing, I was equally guilty of not taking the time to, say, hey, there's a significant event coming up, and it's a year out or whatever. It's not like 50 years just, creeped up on me, right? Oh, voila, it's 50 years. We had time, and we could have planned something, and boy, it was a real disappointment. And I know that my parents, they were happy to have all of us kids together again, but we really missed the mark in trying to recognize, their 50-year commitment of being our parents and, staying married and so forth and being an example. Let's not marginalize things in our lives anymore. Let's not marginalize just the importance of this Constitution. So anyway, let me kind of just move forward, because what I want to do is I want to get into, as I was saying, I want to get into the details of republicanism, as I've said. As we understand, we have a new paradigm that was given to us by Roger Sherman. Now, I'm not sure if you know who Roger Sherman is, but I'm going to tell you that he is the father of American republicanism. He was the only person to sign all four of the U.S. state papers, the Continental Association, the Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Confederation, and the Constitution. Now, I have a lot of love and respect and the highest regard of any framer that I have is for Madison. I have to tell you, Roger Sherman is one of those that is marginalized by history books. Why? Because of his insights in creating American republicanism. Not just making, because as you understand, the progressives love and thrive on mobocracy. They love it when they give everybody a vote and it's 50% plus one. Then it's the mob rules. But our Constitution, as I've been explaining to you, we have these checks and balances, even on we the people. We can't just have a mob rule. We have a Constitution that guarantees protections for the minority, whether that's 49% or 50% minus one, or even two-thirds. We have these different checks that are placed on us that we cannot be oppressed. And that was a huge fundamental principle of the framers. And we'll get into that when we get right back. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
So what I want to say is, if you understand the checks and balances, that there's no such thing as an elitist in our constitutional republic. Now, if anybody would take the time and they would actually look at Congress, you would say, well, that's a cesspool of elitism. And there's no doubt. There's absolutely no doubt that they have elevated themselves so far above the law and they've done it unconstitutionally. Why? Because remember, the ratification debates are the terms and definitions and clarifications of the Constitution, and as they identified limitations that were clear and clearly placed on Congress, on the president, on the federal government, and so forth, on SCOTUS in Massachusetts. Now, I've got to point this out because I just pointed this out just about a week and a half ago. Reverend or Mr. Stillman in the Massachusetts ratification debate was providing his multiple point argument in why we were safe with this Constitution and why they needed to ratify it. And in so ratifying the Constitution, they accepted how Mr. Stillman or Reverend Stillman had clarified the limitations placed on Congress when he stated this: Congress can make no laws that will oppress the people which will not equally involve themselves in the oppression. Now, you tell me this. Where did Congress pass an amendment to get the states to allow them to be above the law so that if they pass a law like Social Security, that they would not have to be participants in that oppressive system? Same thing with Obamacare and so forth. In other words, there's no amendment that they've passed. I've got the states to actually ratify to make them the elitists that they have made themselves. Madison clearly said, no man can be a judge of himself. That is a system that we have been given, that we always have these checks to keep these corrupt, vile parasites from being able to get away with doing these types of things, because they will continue to list oppressions upon us as long as they think it does not have to apply to them. Mr. Stillman goes on and says, what possible motive then can Congress have to abuse their power? Can any man suppose that they will be so lost to their own interest as to abuse their power, knowing at the same time that they equally involve themselves in the difficulty? It is a most improbable supposition. This would be like a man cutting his nose off to spite his face. I place this, sir, among the securities of liberties of my fellow citizens and rejoice in it. As he clarified and provided this definition, this term of the contract, that Congress could not make themselves elitist unless they have an amendment where the states grant them that anonymity, then they are violating the Constitution. And you, sir, madam, whomever, you, my listeners, need to hold them accountable for violating the Constitution as it was defined. You know what they say? Ignorance is no excuse. You took your arm to the square, sir or madam, hack, politician. You put your arm to the square, and that didn't mean that you could do anything you wanted to because you were the king of the day. You are a representative of the people. You are a public servant. And if you do not understand your limitations, then we will have to hold you accountable. My friends, there are plenty of tools within the Constitution and its amendments to hold these vile parasites accountable. And so it's about time we start restoring the integrity, and the sanctity of these, what I would just call these hallowed offices of our government. We've been going way too long in allowing them to just grant themselves all this power as they so desire. Now, let me get back to this whole concept of republicanism again and its importance and why we have these protections, because we have all of these protections within this Constitution. The fact is, nobody has been trying to follow the Constitution for any reason, because it's to their advantage. So what we need to do, because if you understand that right now Congress is not functioning on all cylinders, and what that means is the whole Senate is corrupt. There, even though you may have one or two senators that might also, might have a little, there's a light on the tree, they are not totally clear and cognitive of how far and how bad this is, because they've all been drinking the Kool-Aid. They've all been drinking the Kool-Aid. Anybody that is reciting that they, are functioning properly or in some manner of, resemblance of properness, I am here to tell you that they're not. What we need to do is we need to rescind, if we want to restore American republicanism, we have to rescind the 17th Amendment. So let me give you a little, intro here. With the ratification of the 17th Amendment, there is evidence that this was not properly ratified, but this is a separate issue. I believe it was Bill Benson that clearly delineated and pointed to evidence that proved that it wasn't properly ratified. But I digress. The authors of this amendment unwittingly created a direct conflict with the Amendment Protection Clause in Article 5. Research of the debates in both houses of Congress regarding this amendment revealed that the 17th Amendment was strictly focused on changing Article 1, Section 3 regarding the process of selecting a senator. This article will provide the necessary information to prove, and I'm reading an article here, to prove that, one, those states did not consent to the 17th Amendment are not obligated to adhere to it, and two, that states that previously ratified the 17th Amendment can now rescind their ratification and vote to reject the 17th Amendment. In so doing, the 17th Amendment can be rescinded without going through the arduous task of passing another amendment. So the background on this goes as such. In the construction of Congress, the legislative branch was designed with two houses representing disparate constituents. The House of Representatives, in our Republican form of government, as I have taught you, represented the people of the independent and sovereign states, not the people as a collective body, but as the people of the different states, selected their representatives. In doing this, they delegated to these representatives their suffrage on all matters pertaining. What does suffrage mean? Does anybody got a clue on suffrage? So suffrage, synonyms of that. Well, let's actually go to Google real quick, because I know Google has this propensity of trying to define something when you ask it to. And so we'll just find out how they identify suffrage. And what they do is they say the right to vote in political elections. Okay, so in a representative form of government, you vote on a representative and you've delegated to that person the right to vote for you, to vote for taxes or to vote for, making you wear hats. But hold it. You got to remember that these representatives are held to very specific delegated powers. You didn't just delegate to them as your representative a general power. When you delegate to somebody to go sit in Congress as a representative in the House of Representatives, they are held to the delegated powers that are within the Constitution, constitutional law. That doesn't mean that they can say, oh, we're going to haul you all off and make you, attend our religious studies, and we're going to convert you to this very specific religion. They don't have that power. They only have the power to do those enumerated objects within the Constitution. So they can't vote on things that they don't have the power to do. And so if you understand that, then every single one of them are voting on things like when they voted to censor somebody over speech or hate. They don't have that power. I mean, it may be, a nice a show. It might be noble. But it is unconstitutional and outside the scope of their office and what they should be doing. And as a matter of fact, in the government or in the military, if you're doing something that you have no business doing, then, you could be charged. Whether it's being malingering or whether that is derelict in duties or absolutely violating your duties. But see, they believe that they're above the law. So anyway, in doing this, they delegated to these representatives their suffrage. And so we just hit a heartbreak. So when we come back, I will restate that so we can move forward and give you the background on why we need to rescind the 17th Amendment. So please stay tuned, and we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue, to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
So a little backstory on what I'm reading. This is an article that I wrote a while back. I would say probably 2 years ago. Actually, the basis of this article came out about 2 years ago. And I think this article was written and quasi-published and kind of sent out at least last year. And so it actually helps, I believe, you know, build upon what I've been trying to emphasize and trying to hopefully help you get this concept of republicanism. And this is an integral part of what we need to do. It's a slight paradigm shift, my friends, but if you all of a sudden understand the beauty in this design, you know, with giving people the keys and the necessary tools for them to do their job. If you're a manager, if you are an employee and you have a boss, regardless of where you are in the relationship, right, you understand that somebody, whoever is employed to do a job, they need the appropriate tools to do their job. So when the framers were laying out this Constitution, they made sure that those who had vested interest had the tools to do their job. So the Senate was given very specific responsibilities and tools to help ensure protection both of themselves and the people. The people also, you know, created these sovereigns, or the representatives of the people were given the tools necessary to protect the people as well as the states. But for the most part, the roles, responsibilities were divided and separated so that the Senate did these things and the House did these. What has happened is now the Senate is doing crap that the House does, and the House is kind of doing crap that the Senate does. And when I say crap, I mean they're doing things that they're not supposed to be doing. And they're all doing it together, and they're making it up as they go along. But let me get back to this article, because what I want to do is I'm going to go through this article so that you can kind of understand the argument in repealing the 17th Amendment by rescinding it and not going through the arduous process of an amendment.
And as I was just stating, it goes as this. As the people of the different states selected their representatives in doing this, they delegated to these representatives their suffrage on all matters pertaining to the House of Representatives. The Senate represented the state legislatures as their constituent. Thus, the suffrage for the state legislators or the sovereigns of the state government was delegated to their senators to vote for and on behalf in all matters before the Senate. So in the layout, in the DNA, in the design of the Constitution, the Senate is supposed to be listening to the state legislatures. Even though we changed the process, even though, as I pointed out, Article 1, Section 3 was changed in the process of how we select senators, it did not change who supposedly was supposed to be their constituents and who they were supposed to be supporting. But what happened was, he who pays the piper calls the tune. And so globalists, as soon as the 17th Amendment was passed, globalists started buying seats in the Senate. That is why, if you total up the cost of every Senate seat, it actually costs more than a presidential election. Because if you go through the Senate through the course of the 6 years, you know, for the one term of a senator versus the one term of a president, for everybody in the Senate, you will come to a total in dollars, then buying the Senate is far more influential and there's more money involved in that than in the presidential race. And so, and I know that we spend a lot of money. We're talking billions of dollars every year. There's an election, billions of dollars nationwide. And the presidential election, there's no doubt in my mind that there's billions of dollars equally spent, but I think Trump has kind of been able to bust them at their game because he didn't spend nearly that much money to win the election, I believe, in 2016. Because all he did was he had rallies and he spent his own money. And I don't believe he spent $1 billion of his own to get his nomination in contrast to everybody else. But there is a lot of money in all the contenders and so forth. We're talking a multi-billion dollar industry. If you want to talk about the military industrial complex, you could look at the political industrial complex and how much money gets poured into that. But I digress. The concept of two sovereigns in both the general government and the state government was an innovation in Republican form of government that had never been applied before. Several ratification debates of the Constitution exposed this fact and clearly substantiate the disparate constituents as well as the importance for both sovereigns to be extended suffrage for representation in Congress. Roger Sherman's compromise during the Constitutional Convention recognized the importance of representing the sovereignty of both the people and the state government, in other words, the state legislatures. The people in each state have clearly delegated specific and some general powers to their state legislatures, and some, I've yet to read a state constitution that has just applied nothing but general powers to them. You know, you may have a general power over education because they may have, you know, been stupid enough to give them a general power over education, but they don't have general powers over everything. The people in each state have clearly delegated specific and some general powers to their state legislatures and the government, thus requiring bicameral legislative bodies to distribute roles, responsibilities, and powers in both houses of Congress that were appropriate for the disparate interests of each constituent or sovereign. Even, and you understand the sovereigns, again, the people and the state legislatures for Congress. Even though bicameral legislation was not a new concept, because in Britain they had bicameral legislative bodies, but it was the two disparate sides of the people. It was the House of Commons and the House of Lords. They didn't have, a state represented in the House of Lords, or it would have been called the Senate. Even though bicameral legislation was not a new concept, Roger Sherman's application was a concept of republicanism, where two types of sovereigns were identified to be represented and integrated into both the general government and even the state governments with identical application. Now, in the state governments, I've been telling you that it has been the counties that are equivalent to the states of the federal government. The concept of recognizing the sub-element of government, the states and the national and the counties and the states, for specific suffrage was not only innovative, but this was, but this was what defined American republicanism. In short, this concept was brilliant and was expressed as inspiration from the divine hand of providence, for this political paradigm was beyond the comprehension for the time and laid a foundation to create a symbiotic relationship within the government, within the general government, and as I leave out here, within the state government as well. Because suffrage for each constituent in each house was the critical component. In other words, if you were going to have a representative there, they needed to be able to vote. Who are they voting for? Are they voting for themselves? No, they're supposed to be voting for their constituents. Now, I want to bust the dam here, and I want you to understand that the number one, if you want to call it governor, if you understand what a governor doesn't allow you to go beyond a certain speed, right? If you have a governor on your throttle of your car, motorcycle, or what have you, that's it. That's the maximum. So you don't hurt your engine. You can't hurt yourself. You don't break the law. Our representatives have governors applied to them, and it's called the constitutions. They are not general sovereigns to do anything that they wish to you. They can only do the things that they are allowed to do that have been delegated to that level of government. So suffrage for each constituent in each house was the critical component, and this was debated during the Constitutional Convention as well as some of the state ratification debates of the Constitution. The representatives in the House of Representatives were delegated suffrage for the people or the citizens of each state. And in the Senate, the state legislators delegated their suffrage to the senators. This is all based upon the fundamentals of Republican government, which is a government of representation. Consequently, suffrage, in other words, the right to vote, was voting by delegation for your constituent within the respective chambers of Congress as previously delineated. So we'll end it there, and we're going to pick up the rest of this article for you tomorrow, because you need to understand that what is happening in Congress, it's even worse in your state, because your state counties have been completely marginalized. I ask you, has there ever been a state that has been marginalized, that has lost their suffrage? Not yet, but counties have. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic.
We'll be back. On the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org. So you can become a part of the solution.
So I'm sorry I ran out of time, and we will be back, and we need your help. God bless.